and welcome to another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org, and with me I have my co-host and friend, Franny Nance, former member of Charismania. Franny, it's so good to be back and to talk about this crazy thing that you have sent me this week. I'm not going to lie. I was a little bit taken back. There are things that shock me whenever I'm examining all of this stuff, and then there are things that really shock me. And I don't know. We'll talk about that. What we're actually talking about today, I don't know if you've seen the show Stranger Things. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite shows. It's crazy good. But it would be like Stranger Things told from the other side, and not many people think about the other side. So here this group of kids, they're in this town, all of these bad things are happening every season to this town, totally destroying parts of the city and traumatizing the people in it. Well, the mm-hmm. kids come out as heroes, and you're looking forward to the next season of the heroes. But what about the other side? What about the people that are left traumatized? Nobody's ever thought about what it would be like to live in the city where these things are coming up out of the ground and snagging people. You'd be terrified. You would not want to stay in it. And the sad truth is, that's kind of like the religion that we came out of. It was Stranger Things, and they were terrorizing us, but yet we wanted to stay in it, which is really, really weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, what John is referencing was a Instagram video I came across by a creator named April Joy. She was recreating a pastor, or not pastor, I don't even know, apostle, self-appointed apostle, prophet, Katie Souza, who I was not very familiar with.
One time I fought with a warlock who astral projected as a light being into the room I was in, and I physically fought with him. It was a knife fight. He had this crooked blade like this. It was actually made of light. This is how do you even explain these things? And I actually snagged it from him and buried it in his chest and said, "Dominion, dominion, dominion." And he popped out. There was actually witches that were flying around the house that were setting up a perimeter or a grid for him to be able to do that.
Oh my God.
And when I woke up in the morning, I had physical bruises all over my body. So this was not just a fight in the spirit.
Wow.
This stuff is real.
And it was comedic, and it caught my attention because I thought it was so funny, but it's also, I've lived that, not lived where I'm, you know, battling a witch, but lived in that environment where people tell these stories. So basically, it's an interview that Katie Souza is doing on a podcast, and she's talking about telling this guy about her battle with a warlock, that the warlock astral projects into her house, and, you know, she's fighting him, and he has a dagger, and she has to turn and stab the dagger into him, and yells "Dominion!" And while this is happening, there's a coven of witches. They're setting up a perimeter, these are her words, around her house so the warlock can, you know, attack her. And it's funny because in the real, this creator is jokingly reenacting it to make it really does, it seems so absurd. But I watched that, and then she did another part where Katie Souza talks about how that same warlock appeared and got in bed with her and was trying to recruit her to his side. And it's reading the comments, some people are like, this is insane, and it just seems so ridiculous. But I actually have real stories from people that had positions of authority in my life, my family, that told those stories as truth to me as a young person, a kid, and I was traumatized. So I appreciated this creator because it actually, you know, brought some light and, you know, to that trauma that I experienced. But that I think it just sort of got me thinking on just the system itself, the fact that there are people out there like a Katie Souza, who, by the way, is being promoted by Charisma Magazine, that's coming out with a book. The Royce Report was just talking about it, where, you know, and we can talk about it more, but she gets into the fact that she said that an alien took her eggs in the middle of the night and is now created alien. I mean, I couldn't even read the article because I was like, this is insane. But these, in this system, these are people that are, you know, set up and, given positions of authority, and no one really challenged. No one really actually challenges it, because I think some of the stories are so insane, and how you can't prove that. And so you're taking these people on their word, but this Charismania deliverance system, just you give over your authority, agency, whatever, to these people, and we just give them, we allow them to tell whatever stories. So anyway, I thought we could get into that and sort of spend some time talking about that system itself. It's not just like, oh, that one weird person, and you know, we kind of move on. But it's why does this movement, we attract that, we platform them, and then wonder why these abuses continue, or why people stay stuck, or what? And it's, you know, we all play a role in that, but it's this system that's set up to attract that.
It's such a crazy system. What's funny is, whenever I was in Branhamism, we looked at all of this mess and this chaos as chaos, and we would correctly brand it as something that just did not make any sense and was quite absurd. Yet we were doing many of the same things. That's the really, really crazy part of all of this. I have sitting on my desk a little sword that somebody gave me, because I did a podcast talking about William Branham, who claimed he had a magic sword. I grew up as a teenager listening to these recordings of this magic sword, and even as an adult, I'm believing that the man had a magic sword. And yet, I'm in IT. There's no way I should believe this. But you shut off all critical thinking, and even people who are highly intelligent, you fall for this stuff. It's really, really difficult. The thing that I'll say about the Katie Sousa video, I listened to both of those, and whenever she started talking about the creature that got in bed with her, she made some comment and said something to the effect, "I know how good you are," as he lifted up the covers. The way she said it made me question a lot of things.
We had the last meeting, everything was great. We go back to our Airbnb. I lay down, I'm thinking, hey, victory. We took out this warlock, you know, for the meeting. The meeting's great. I'm starting to go to sleep. I'm worshiping. And all of a sudden, he comes sliding in from the side. And he's now in the bed next to me. And he goes like this. He taps the bed and basically said to me, "You have mad skills. You need to get in bed with me."
Wow.
He tried to recruit me.
And I'm just going to put that off to the side, because I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt that she truly believes this. But I will say this. I have family who have mental health issues, and I understand the complexities of what happens when you have mental health issues. There is a chance that she truly believes that this thing happened and this creature got in bed with her and said she was the best thing since sliced bread. Mm-hmm. That may exist in her brain as being real, but I understand what happens when people are suffering. I want to focus instead, at least for my part of this podcast, I want to focus on what happens to the people who sit through that. Say there is some mental health issues or whatever. When people aren't shutting off critical thinking, and they're believing everything that is said as though it is a mythology about the movement, then that mythology starts to enter their brain as reality. And so somebody who's struggling with mental health might actually impact the entire congregation through a mythological standpoint. And then the mythology grows. Yes. And what happens is, when you have a sort of mental health disorder, you may feed on the people that you're telling it to, and then it grows worse and worse and worse. Now, I'm not saying that she has anything wrong. I don't know. I don't know her. Like I said, I do have some questions about what she said, but in the end, it comes out to this. If it were painted as a Stranger Things fictional show that I can turn on Hulu and I can watch, or Netflix and I can watch, it might make an interesting show, but as part of a Christian church, what in the world is she thinking? This is not something that you really talk about in Christian churches, unless you want the focus to be on you and not on Christ or the Bible.
One thing with that reel and Katie Sousa's story really stood out to me, because people are like, well, this lady's crazy. And I'm like, there are plenty more like her. There was a family friend of ours that we grew up with, and she had a lot of influence in our family. And I've mentioned her before just she has a lot of trauma in her background, was in a concentration camp in Eastern Europe during World War II, a lot of that. So the reason the video stood out to me is because, so my parents would host her often and, you know, advertise like, hey, come to our house, you know, she's going to be here and we're going to have like a time of healing. She's so anointed. And again, none of these things, she didn't have proof of the healings or the manifestations or whatever. We just went off of the stories she told us. And so one time when she came to our house, my parents hosted people over at her home, and they did a night of ministry. And I gave up my room when she came to stay with us, and she would stay in my room. Anyway, this is pertinent to the story. So the next day, she's after the ministry night, I get up, it's breakfast, we're talking, and she's packing up and getting ready to leave, so I'm going to get my room back. And she just proceeds to tell the story where she's will say, oh, this one man that was there, who I knew and was pretty beloved in the community, and she's like, when I prayed for him, he had a weird manifestation. There was a weird, you know, sexual spirit that came off of him. And, you know, we're all like, well, what? And she said, well, yeah, so that night I went to bed, and as I'm laying in bed, this asexual being just shows up in my room, and it comes towards me and is whining and wants to snuggle with me. And I'm just trying to cast it out, and it won't listen. And it crawls into bed with me and trying to snuggle with me. I'm a child. I'm hearing this like a teenager. I'm like, what? And I'm thinking, she's sleeping in my bed. It's like, so she's telling the story. And she said the only thing that made it go away was she had to take her Bible and wrap it around the being's head and squeeze it, and it disappeared. What? So think about, like, you're raised like this, you're a kid, this is a person that you trust, and I'm around this my entire life. And so I'm thinking, it is thinking critically in a sense of, wait a second, we're told that, you know, Jesus came, defeated death, that he has authority over the devil, that you just have to cast out demons and, you know, speak his name and the devil will flee. Well, this one's not fleeing, you know? And so there's always, the bar is always moving, it's always changing. So I heard multiple stories like that growing up. And those things stay with you. They implant in you. And, you know, no one's challenging this woman. It's someone that we trust. And she's been given a position of authority in our family, but also in various churches where she speaks and in this, you know, charismatic movement. So that is why a person like a Katie Souza is, in my mind, it's not just her being dangerous, but it's also just people platforming her and then the system that perpetuates that. And again, I don't know Katie Souza's mental state. However, I know I have read that there's trauma in her background. And so there seems to me, where I'm identifying, there's a pattern of people that don't receive, you know, the mental help or the help, the physical, whatever it is, the help that they need help. And so they just map this like spiritual warfare deliverance language onto what they experienced. And then we platform them, and then they perpetuate that onto other people instead of, you know, the same person was like, if I'm experiencing anxiety, well, it's back to the same thing we've talked about. Will you open the door to the devil? Or you're so anointed, the devil's coming at you. And that's kind of the language that I see a Katie Souza use, where it's like, look how anointed and powerful I am. And it continues to bolster her platform. You know, the devil's coming after me. And I did a little, just a Reddit search. I'm always curious what people are saying. And it's interesting because there's a lot of defenders of her online. And this is what I heard about many people in ministry, in the deliverance or charismatic ministry growing up, where it's like, well, they're a demon slayer. They're on another level. Like they're really anointed. So they deal in things that we just don't know. And I'm just, who says? And what's the evidence that supports that?
You know, that's just it. What is the evidence? Usually on the podcast, I cover the historical aspects of the ministries, because you can look to the histories and you can plainly see that there's a problem here. But whenever these groups take it into the so-called spiritual realm, and they're talking about witches and warlocks and demons and all kinds of nutty stuff, Branham said, I should mention this, Branham claimed that one of the demons that plagued him looked exactly like Ali Oop from the Funny Papers. And if you know that cartoon, you're like, what in the world did that man just say? And we believed it hook, line, and sinker. I grew up believing that Ali Oop was plaguing William Branham. It's crazy. But when you're growing up in this world where they're throwing everything into the spiritual side, you can't critically think. There is no way to critically examine this. You're basically left, either you believe it or you don't. It's only one of those two things. But what it gives you, whether you believe it or whether you don't, it trains you in this worldview where you're constantly scanning for danger. Everywhere you look, there is danger. It's an invisible danger that you can't see. And for people like people I knew who really didn't believe in that spiritual warfare stuff, I didn't believe it in the way that you did, I still looked for it because they were trying to battle me. And I was trying to fight the invisible demon. And that's what you're doing. You're looking under every rock. You get in bed at the hotel. Granted, I don't believe that any's going to get in bed and say, John, you're really, really good, as they lift up the covers. But you're looking for things that aren't there. And that type of worldview, it plagues your mind until literally people go crazy over this stuff.
Yeah. Also with, and again, I'm not a mental health therapist. I just can only go off of my own personal experience. But a lot of times too, people try to map on like spiritual, and I get it. Like if you've suffered a deep trauma and, you know, really looking into like complex PTSD and really borderline personality disorder, kind of understanding that a little bit more, where you have suffered a lot of deep childhood trauma and you do look for ways to map, like you do feel crazy. Like, so you try to find significance in it, or you try to map, you know, language onto it. And so I think that this woman in our life, definitely, I know she suffered a lot, but in, you know, there was always a spiritual language mapped onto it. You know, I'm depressed, or this person's rejecting me. I'm perceiving this person is rejecting me, so therefore they must be a witch, and they sense the Jesus in me, so I need to, whatever, pray against them. Or instead of just like, I don't think this person's rejecting you, they could be in a bad mood, they might not have seen you. There's just, it's always, instead of let's look at this rationally, and it causes torment for the person themselves who thinks, well, you know, instead of maybe they had a bad day, I'm going to move on with my life. It's like, oh, there's witches everywhere and I'm receiving this rejection. It's this grandiosity where it's, you know, it all revolves around you. And like you were saying, you are looking for a demon under every rock. And it's dangerous in a sense, because it also, if people don't challenge that, it just keeps you in a really dangerous feedback loop too. Because if you, and what I saw of people's comments on Reddit, and the same thing with my own life, if you even ask the question, like, did that really happen? You know, come on. Then it's like, well, that's a religious spirit, and that's a religious demon that is now like warfare against me, or, you know, the God's anointed, because you're questioning them, or you don't have faith, or that's a spirit of doubt. And so people like me growing up in it, then you're just like, well, I don't want to open the door to the devil, because doubting is an open door. I'm not going to doubt that. And, you know, this woman in our life, and I see this in ministry too, they have a lot of power over you and these people, because you put them, you think, okay, well, they're so anointed, they're on this level that I'm not on. They're saying they see demons. They're saying there's manifestations around them. I'm not seeing it, but I guess they're just more spiritual than me, because they use the Bible, they use scripture. They can at times function normally. So there is that slow silencing of your own discernment and critical thinking, and you substitute their authority or their discernment. And I will say, I'm not trying to harp on this woman, so I'm not using her name, but she just had such an outsized influence on her family And I see that in these movements with a lot of these ministers, like a Katie Souza or a Catherine Crick that, you know, we haven't really talked about, but she's another one that's out there. And I want to say that because they also use the term, I use the term discernment, but they use that against you as well. I do remember whenever this woman would come visit us, we would all be on edge, like, what is she going to discern on us? You know, we're not doing anything wrong, but I don't know. Like, she might sense something that I've been into that I didn't realize I was into. So there's this fear of being falsely accused. There's this fear of what door did I open because she's so anointed. And then my sisters and I were always terrified because we're thinking like, please, I don't want to hear anything. I don't want to see anything. I want to go to sleep. And I will say to this day, you know, my sister would share this. One of them just struggles with her sleep because we could watch a true crime movie documentary all day long. That doesn't scare us. Anything supernatural, you know, I've had to work through that, and so honestly, watching stuff like Stranger Things, it's like, this is an entertaining show. This is not real. You know, like, this is a show. I can remove that versus a lot of times with anything spiritual, it's terrifying as a child, and you kind of grow up and it's embedded there, and it takes a lot of work to have to speak to yourself in a critically thinking way of, you know, let's challenge that. What's the evidence? What are we seeing? And instead of just going with it and staying stuck in that cycle.
Well, and that cycle is debilitating. To people who are in that cycle, fear and anxiety actually turns into discernment. Mm-hmm. I knew this guy who went into this office for an interview, and he came out saying, I could just sense the spirits in that place. I'm not sure if I want to work there or not. And this is an office building where guys are like sitting at a computer doing boring stuff, right? There's no territorial spirits plaguing this office, I can assure you. But what he felt was anxiety. And mm-hmm. when you're in that mindset, anything that is fear, you feel it's a spirit, what it trains you to do is to reevaluate your own emotions and try to put it also in the spiritual realm. And by doing that, I mean, there's a reason why we have our emotions. There's a reason God gave us the instinct for fear. It's to protect us, right? Well, if we shove that into the spiritual realm and we're not even thinking about our own fears, I give it to God, give the glory to God, and he's going to take away this demon that's infesting me. Well, what if there's a real reason for your fear and you need to turn and run? Well, that type of mentality puts us actually in physical danger, if you think that through. But more to the point, it turns people into basically zombies. I hate to say it, but you go into a building and you're afraid to go to a job interview because a territorial spirit might infest a building. Well, how are you even going to get a job? Every job interview is going to give you some level of anxiety. I came out of that mindset because I did have that to an extent. I came out of that mindset because when I began my business, I was kind of forced into that anxiety. When you go try to get new clients, you're going to be anxious no matter what. And the only way it works is if you conquer those demons, right? So I kind of forced myself through it. But there are people who just bottle up and they do nothing because of it. Mm-hmm. And you only have the ministers to blame who are projecting this type of fear on your being.
Yes, I love that you said that about discernment. And sometimes it's you're discerning an evil spirit, but it's normal anxiety for starting something new or going somewhere. And it does keep you trapped. It's interesting. One thing with childhood trauma, people develop something called hypervigilance. And sometimes it can be a real superpower. You can read the room, like you are can be kind of intuitive and sort of know. And I think that a lot of times people take that hypervigilance and, you know, substitute it as like it's a spiritual gift. I mean, I did that. But it's interesting because I'm, you know, 44. That hypervigilance does not serve me anymore. In fact, it's a hindrance. Like, you know, I've noticed that in my own professional life where I'm thinking, I'm over-reading this. You know, I need to relax and just roll with it. You know, I'm trying too hard to over-read this. And so that I'm getting in my own way. And so that's actually, something I've been working through in therapy is not just, you don't, sh like you're saying, your emotions are there for a reason, but is this rooted in a past, pattern that isn't serving me anymore? What is this data giving me? And I think with a lot of times people are saying hypervigilance, but it's, oh, this is discernment, but it is, it's hypervigilance and it's paranoia. There is, same person growing up too, this woman was very obsessed with her looks and her weight, just a tormented, I don't want to get fat. I don't want to, whatever. And again, grew up around someone with an eating disorder. Anyway, point being, she would tell the story about a woman who was from Eastern Europe, where she was, that came over to the US. And so they met, and she was trying to help her settle in. And she said, "I had to cut this woman out of my life." And we were like, "Well, what happened?" Well, she just kept, bringing me baked goods and stuff that she was making. And she said it was a thank you for all the help I've given her. But it's a spirit of jealousy on her because she's trying to make me fat. And so she just kept bringing me all this stuff. And the more you, and you have to look out for that. Women are jealous. And so, and they've got that spirit on them. And so they will try to make you fat by bringing you. And I'm thinking, looking back on that, I'm like, the woman didn't probably have any other way to thank her other than like making her, food and bringing her, showing her gratitude for her help. But there was that too with, do you have acne? Well, then someone's probably cursing you, or you open a door to the devil, or, well, okay, so you prayed against the devil, you've prayed against curses. Well, maybe now it's a health issue. I mean, it was just, it le you are just constantly going back to that person that you think is anointed to give you more answers, to have like a deeper insight. Well, maybe if I can get to this next level, I'll understand. But there's always, with this deliverance ministry and discernment and healing, all of that, there's always some, they always come up with a new name. Like there's a spirit of blah, blah, blah over this area, principality, or whatever. And when I would push back and say, like, well, I don't see that in the Bible, it's, they give you some word salad where it's just like, well, in the scripture, and, and they go into this Leviticus where this principality did this to Israel. So this is over here. And ugh, I don't, it's so tiring. And they kind of talk around it. So you just sort of believe them, especially if you grow up and you're primed. And I think why some of this is so insidious too is because the spiritual abuse of it all is that it is, your beliefs, religious beliefs are, it's, you're vulnerable. It's a sacred, it's, I believe this. Like, and then there's someone who is using that and twisting it for their own purposes. And whether you think that this person knows what they're doing and they're doing it on purpose or whatnot, I mean, I think sometimes these people believe their own delusions. And they will be held accountable for that as well, because, you can't claim ignorance.
Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the latter rain, charismatic, and other fringe movements into the new apostolic reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support. There's another risk too, and that is that sometimes when you're caught up in that mindset, you can have a totally normal experience and your mindset is such that you're in the spiritual warfare realm, and so you want to take your normal experience and put it into that spiritual realm so that you too can be just like the just like the kids in Stranger Things, who's actually behind the pulpit preaching Stranger Things. Take, for instance, nightmares. There are many people who have nightmares, and in many instances, The dreams are just simply your brain processing something that happened. That's why if you go to counseling, usually you'll find out that you have this recurring dream about somebody that you really have this deep-rooted issue with. And if you get rid of the deep-rooted issue, then the dreams kind of correct themselves. So you may have a normal issue, but take the person who's been indoctrinated in the spiritual warfare. I'm getting nightmares because the demon is now plaguing me. Mm-hmm. And you start to believe this. Well, then there is a problem that exists with some people. They get so caught up in that cycle that the nightmares turn into the spiritual warfare. The spiritual warfare turn into bigger nightmares because that's now rooting in your psyche. And then eventually it cascades into this sleep paralysis. So there are people who are literally paralyzed in fear because they're caught up in this mindset. And it all stems from a person who may be either A, suffering mental delusions behind the pulpit, or B, just lying through their teeth. And you don't know which it is. But in the end, I'm of the opinion that none of it should really be behind the pulpit anyway, because that's not talking about Christianity. This is talking about spiritual warfare that is in a fantasy world that has nothing to do with the Bible.
Christians aren't allowed to have anything bad happen to you or have any, you know, suffering or whatever, which I see in the Bible often. It's like there's a lot of suffering and things that happen that we don't have answers for. It's funny, I had a friend send me the Bible Project, I don't know if you're aware of that, the video about Ecclesiastes, and just, you know, been watching it or whatever, but thinking about there is wisdom in that of the, you know, we're all vapor. It's not like we're all terrible, but just there's things that we don't have answers for. It's, you know, pointless, and we don't know. We won't know. And that's part of being human, and you have to be okay with that. And this type of Christianity, I mean, I think all of it does, but really this NAR, extreme charismania, they love to have an answer for everything, and everything is wrapped up in a bow. And that's kind of how, you know, I'm throwing Bethel out there too. They are like that too. You know, we're no sick. No Christian should be, you know, sick. No Christian should be suffering. We're here to bring heaven on earth, you know. And then there's no answer for, you know, Bill Johnson's wife passed of cancer, you know. And I'm not trying to throw that in their face, but, you know, she wasn't miraculously healed. But a lot of times these people too, I've noticed they just kind of move on by, you know. And it's pretty typical, I think, of these leaders who get a platform. If they don't have an answer for it, they just sort of talk over you and move on and try to distract you with, you know, with something else.
So we mentioned how the spiritual leader, whenever they're talking about this mythological experience they have, people get caught up in it. I don't think we've talked yet about what happens to children. And this is the part that really bothers me the most. Take the stories that she's talking about. We went to an Airbnb. So this is a unfamiliar place. If you're a child, many children are scared of these places, right? It's somebody's house. So we're scared of this initially as a child. And now we've just heard the story that a person is saying where, oh my gosh, there was a demon in the bed. And think of the small child who gets in the bed alone. Usually in an Airbnb, you've got your own rooms. It's large as a house. Well, they go in the room and the lights are off and it's dark in there. Oh my gosh, what if that demon gets in my bed with me? Mm-hmm. And what it does, it causes children to grow up in such a level of fear that they can't be raised in a healthy way. I'll just say it like that. The child's experience is not only framed by the mythological supernatural thing, but it's also shaped by their developing mentality of just simply the world around them. They're already struggling with trying to cope with the fact that they're developing their mental skills as they're growing, and you're actually hindering them when you talk about these things. Again, there are places to talk about such things if you really believe them. Behind a Christian setting in a pulpit or in a Christian book, it's just simply not the place to have it. And part of the reason that I do what I do is I remember watching, as I was leaving the cult, I was coming to terms with the fact that this is wrong, but I was watching the sad eyes of the children whenever we were coming to make that decision, and looking around the room at them, I wanted every single child in there to escape this place.
Yeah.
I can't do it. I can't talk the parents into making their children leave it, but hopefully something we say can make somebody realize, if you're going to talk about this, if you're going to believe this stuff, even though I say it's it's out there. It's like a Harry Potter world. If you're going to do this, don't talk about it in front of your children. Let them grow up healthy.
Yes, 100%. I would say I have a tender heart towards any child being raised at all in any of this charismania, because it has taken so many years of unlearning and undoing for me. And I am grateful that, you know, I have 3 kids and I look at them, and again, I'm not saying I'm this awesome parent, but at the same time, I'm thinking, you have no idea. It was like, when I was your age, I was terrified, but you know, and I had to know what spiritual warfare was, and the, you know, the sword of the spirit. And at any moment, a demon could appear in my room, you know, and I had to be ready. Or I you know, I remember people talking about seeing angels. I'm like, I don't want to see that. I don't. I mean, my sister told me, she's like, I used to pray, please, God, please don't let me see angels. And then we would be shamed for that. You know, like, why don't you want to see the, you know, the glory of God? It's so powerful. But there's this, it's like this movement they love to talk about these crazy stories, spiritual warfare, these ghost stories. And it bolsters their position that they're these like very anointed, powerful people. And it builds into their own grandiosity of like, I'm this special anointed person. And then they are spewing their own trauma and mess onto other people. Again, these are things that aren't confirmed. Like, you can tell me all day long, this is another story I've been told, you know, someone shows up at the door and all of a sudden their face starts contorting and they start screaming, what's going on? And this quote minister is like, well, it's the power of God that's transforming you. Repent, you know. And I'm thinking, I don't want that to happen to me. I don't want to see that. Those are all things I would hear as a kid. And I'm like, and then it was like, well, why don't you want, it's the power of God is so amazing. Like, you should want people to be set free. And why are you afraid? Like, you have, you know, the power of God in you. And I'm thinking, but then I'm hearing stories where people are having to have literal battles with the devil. And there's just stuff that I'm, you know, I don't need to know about astral projection when I'm 10, you know, or about all these weird things. Meanwhile, this is the same crew of people that are freaking out in the 90s about kids reading Harry Potter because it's going to get them into witchcraft. And I'm thinking, you all are you're doing the same thing, and actually way worse than something like, and I know people get triggered by Harry Potter, but honestly, like I said, as an adult, I went back and read them, and it's actually a really amazing story of good versus evil. It's not what people think it is, and I would say more of these deliverance, spiritual warfare, charismania, healing people are way more dangerous in exposing you to that world than a Harry Potter book. But something else that's interesting is you're saying, like, what you expose kids to. These people don't realize what they're exposing children to. And I was thinking, too, again, I see these things pop up on social media where that Catherine Crick, who is a church in LA, who's like the next sensational deliverance minister, where she's at a book signing in Barnes & Noble and people look like they're being electrocuted. And it's like, oh, look at this. It's the power of God. That is disturbing. Like, one, that's not fair to the person that's manifesting. That's embarrassing, like, of what you're doing to yourself. And then they get special, you know, notoriety because, look at me, I'm being touched by God and healed. How do you prove that? You know, she's walking around saying, you know, this person was delivered and God's healing this person right now of autism. And it's like, how do you know? You just have to take the person's word for it. And if this person's like, oh no, I went to her, and they get very defensive, I was there at her church and I was set free, and or I went to a Katie Souza meeting and they set me free of this, and then I was on the next level where I could see, you know, snakes manifesting and whatnot. This is not healthy. It's not healthy behavior. It's not healthy thinking, and it is keeping you stuck in that loop. But we're also keeping that system going by platforming these people and allowing them unchallenged to do this. But, you know, and then when you do challenge these people, you're told that you're jealous or it's a religious spirit coming after them. And it's the same playbook, because I see actually saw an interview with Katie Souza where someone, not Katie, excuse me, I'm getting these people mixed up, with Catherine Crick, where someone was saying, you know, these people are criticizing you. And she's like, well, you know, they're just, I'm not going to speak to that. You know, it's grievous and whatever. But the Lord told me not to defend myself, that he's my defender. And I was like, that is a Mike Bickle, straight out of the IHOP KC, Mike Bickle. And I'm like, you all are all the same. And it's the same thing, you know, with other, I've been in, you know, work environments where there's been a boss that's very, you know, narcissistic in that way, where it's like, I'm not even going to speak to that. That is, God, the Lord is my defender. And it's like, that's another abusive way that people, you know, keep their power and try to shut down criticism. And in this system, we allow it, we go along with it, we allow them. And to me, a sort of looking at, I love the videos that, you know, make fun of it, expose. I think it's funny. I like it when people point out, you know, hey, this person's unhealthy. But I think what really needs to happen is, yes, there's this one weird person, but it's a system. This system is made up of unhealthy, unchecked people who haven't dealt whatever it is with their own mental health issues or trauma, whatever, you know, or maybe they're truly nefarious and just continuing it because they want power and money. And we just keep it going. We're sort of like, oh, well, you know, Todd Bentley had a huge ministry and then he fell. And so we discard him and throw him off to the wayside. Again, I'm not saying Todd Bentley wasn't an abuser, but it's, you know, and then we find another person to platform, and it just, the cycle keeps going. Whereas it's like, we need to start questioning. And John, I feel like you've said this before in one of your podcasts as well as listening to, where you're not blaming the people who have suffered at the hands of these leaders. But at the same time, at what point are we responsible and need to step out of that system and call out the system itself?
Well, think of it like this. It's a system that produces different worlds with different meanings to different people. Take the Harry Potter thing. So when I was in the movement, we were in this weird world where we saw outside charismatics as evil and corrupt and didn't believe anything that they said. At the same time, many of the people in our group was not allowed to watch television or movies. I was in a special category because my family was up higher than this, and the cult leader and his children watched television, and we knew it. So I'm watching television and movies, and I watched Harry Potter. I loved it. It was great, and I did not think anything about spiritual warfare or anything like this. This is a children's story written for children. That's the way I looked at it. And then I was telling somebody that I watched it, and their jaw dropped. Do you not know that the devil can come through your TV and get into your house if you watch this kind of stuff, because it's so filled with demons and the demon realm? And I'm like, are you kidding me? That's greater fantasy than even Rowling was writing, right? So I grew up in that mindset that I could recognize that the children's story was written for the children, but there were adults that didn't. So you have two different worlds, two different competing worlds. Now take all of the spiritual warfare that's being told from the person behind the pulpit, and all of the adults in there are cheering it on. Yes, you fought a demon. Yes, this demon came into your bed and said, you're really good at what you do, while they lifted up the covers. Well, the adults are cheering this on, and the children are thinking, oh my gosh, this is a scary thing. I can't believe this happened. So everybody's viewing the story differently. And yet, at the same time, it's creating it as a mythology where people are supposed to believe it in the same way. No two groups of people do. They're all different. So what is happening to the children's head, the parents are not even seeing, because their head, their mind, is in a completely different place.
Yeah, that's a good point. I do think about that. I would say that's how, being a kid and raised in it, that's so interesting you say that with the mindset, you know, because my parents, they became Christians when in their adult life. So they were not raised that way, very secular or whatever. Us, and so for them, they had a different mindset. Oh, thank God, God saved us. Like, you know, we're going to make sure our children know the Lord. And so there's earnestness and sincerity in that. But I'm just thinking, this is different. Like, you didn't grow up with this fear of if I turn on the radio and a certain song might come on that will influence me, the demon's going to jump on me. And like I said, for many years, I really believed that, you know, maybe some of these outlandish prophetic words that were spoken over my family, you know, or my parents or whatever, weren't coming to pass because I have unbelief or I have some open door that I'm letting the enemy come in to attack my family to hinder the blessings of the Lord. And so maybe God will bless my family, my parents, once I move out. I mean, no one said those words. That's the thing. It's like no one's saying those exact words. But when you're immersed in it for long enough and you see, you go hop from revival ministry to revival and all these like crazy people that come in and you just take them at their word. Like, there's a man that my father was friends with named, his name is Isaiah Reed. I've tried to look him up to see if he's still around, but he walks around claiming that maybe he does have an autopsy scar. I don't know. He claims that he was revived while they were doing an autopsy on him or whatever. And that's his shtick. And so it's like, well, I have tried to actually honestly, like, what are there doctor's records? Are there, you know, legal records saying like confirmed his story? And I haven't been able to find it, but the system primes you, especially if you're raised in it. You either think you're crazy and you're a sinner and God must really hate you. So you walk around with this like shame, which I would say I had a lot of that I'm like, well, this prophecy isn't coming to pass. And like, why isn't it being fulfilled? Or I must have opened the door to the devil. Or you're primed to take people's word at it. The more charismatic and the more outlandish the story and the more intensely they tell it with, you know, scripture sprinkled in, you believe it. And if you don't believe it, you have a religious spirit. And that's impossible. You can't argue against that. Like, you just can't. And so I think it does. I feel deeply for children because it does keep them trapped. And I'll say, you know, one more thing. I remember when we first moved out here to California, we're like, okay, we're going to try to find a church. And there's a lot more like non-denom mega churches out here. Because we came from like a Presbyterian, whatever, boring, as people would say, boring church. But it was great, a wonderful church, very intellectual or whatever. Anyway, when we came out here, we tried a non-denominational church that did not say they're charismatic or anything like that. And, you know, they had a big youth group. So we're like, all right, we'll go. And we did not last long because... Well, one, the pastor had a guest speaker, and she was from a pastor from Jesus Culture, which the connection, they're Bethel, whatever. I like lost it. I was like, what? You know. but my son came home because we sent him to the youth group, and I picked him up, and I'm driving home, and he goes, Mom, what's the rapture? And I'm almost like, what? You know, like, what do you mean? How do you know? Who's talking to you about the rapture? You know, what is it? You know? And he was like, oh, I don't, you know, I was like, are they teaching you that? I mean, I was just livid. And he was like, no, 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 no. He said, there's a guy, a boy in my prayer group. And this is, you know, my son's 12. And he asked for prayer because he's so worried. He's having trouble sleeping because his dad isn't a Christian. And he's terrified that his dad is going to miss the rapture. And I'm like, my heart broke for that boy. I'm just, what, you have to live with that you're somehow responsible, like your dad's not a Christian, so, you know, he's going to suffer in hell and he's not going to get raptured with you. And I'm like, that is, it really, we left after that. The theology that you are teaching and the critical thinking skills needed, they're so important. And when it is cloaked with this intense emotion and charismania and, you know, charismatic people telling you this and it's fun and here's this emotional music and whatever, and it's not challenged, you are setting up your child, like a child, for a very like paranoid, tormented life. I mean, no 12-year-old should carry the weight of that fear of you know, my father, my parent that is a caregiver is going to somehow suffer an eternal damnation because they aren't Christians. And that's this weightiness that he is carrying. And I'm like, and that made me angry because that brought me back to being a child. And just, it's not just the deliverance, the spiritual warfare, the healing, the scary, like crazy stuff. It's also that heavy pressure of, you have to save the people around you. God has given you a gift. Therefore, if you are discerning something on them, you need to go lay hands on them and pray for them. You need to tell them about Jesus, because you're not going to feel very good when you're going to heaven and you see these people burning in hell, and you could have told them. So it's just, it is not healthy for children. The more I'm like talking to you about it and see, it's not healthy for anyone to be raised in that. It's an environment of fear, shame, and paranoia, and does lay the groundwork for an emotionally unhealthy adult.
You're talking about rapture, and it brings up all of these memories, most of which are triggering in my head. But one of the memories it brought up is I had a family member, I may have mentioned this on the podcast, but I have a family member who believed in the rapture like we all did. We were taught the doomsday rapture was coming, and we were going to be part of this special little group that's going to be caught away. Mm-hmm. And this person would cry uncontrollably before getting on the bus to go to school, because they would be separated from their parents. And what if the rapture comes whenever their parents are away from them? How will they find their parents in heaven? All of those thoughts that a normal child is going to have, the adults aren't even thinking through. And when they're preaching about it, they're preaching, yes, this is a good thing, and they're talking about this really, really scary thing that is about to happen, if you believe that mindset. The children are thinking of the scary thing, and the adults are thinking of the happy thing. So again, two different worlds, two different views of what is being said. The rapture theology itself, most people are unaware that that theology is only like 200 years old. It's not that new, and that's part of the reason why it was eventually replaced in the same movement that this developed from. But we believed it, and I believe that we were going to be part of the chosen few that's taken away. As a child, I can't say that I was crippled by that fear, but I did have it. And now as an adult, having gone through therapy and understanding things like complex trauma, look at the complex trauma that has caused widespread in the movement, because children are dealing with their normal struggles and their normal fears, complicated by these things that they're told is in the spiritual realm that they can't put any sense at all to. So they just kind of disconnect it in their mind and build trauma on top of trauma on top of trauma. And you end up with complex trauma, and it takes years to overcome that.
Yeah, and you have to even, it's hard too to even identify it. I would say like in my 20s, and again, if I'm repeating myself, but where I'm crying all the time, you know, when I told that story about, you know, it was actually a pastor at a church that was like, you need to go to therapy. But just crying all, 'cause I'm like, I was raised a Christian. I was raised a super Christian. I have the Holy Spirit. I know spiritual warfare. I know deliverance. I know all these things. I went to IHOP. I've done all this. Why am I distressed? You know, it's like, why am I tormented? Why am I suffering with anxiety? Why am I suffering with like paranoid thoughts and, you know, up one day, down the next, what am I doing wrong? It's always like, what door have I opened? What am I doing wrong? And there, and I was exhausted because I was thinking, I can't do anymore. Like, I read the Bible, I pray, I put on my armor, I listen to worship music, I go to church, I am surrounded by people, I break these curses and whatnot, and I am still struggling mentally. And I'm so grateful for the people in my life that loved me enough to stick with me and not perpetuate these, you know, paranoid thoughts. But it's taken years to undo what was, you know, implanted as a child, really, in those patterns. And I've seen it, you know, with other people. And that's, you know, why I do appreciate people telling their stories and sharing. And I do feel defensive when they get criticism of, you know, like, quote, deconstructing or, you know, reconstruct, whatever the term. But it's like, this is, everyone needs to do that. Everyone needs to dismantle their beliefs and of questioning. And then you can build a firm foundation as far as like, okay, now this is why I think this. This is why I believe that. And allowing people to do that. But this movement doesn't allow for that, because when you start asking questions, it honestly pulls the thread, too many threads, for the people who are in power, for the leaders, where they don't have answers. They don't for that. And so it threatens their ministry that they've grown, their position of power. And if they have to be held accountable for that, like, it's not going to be there. And I think, you know, some of us too, in that system, you have to be okay with saying it's the system itself. And this was the one thing when we were attending this church, and I will say, I just highly encourage people to go into the archives of your podcast as well, because that's something, you know, and the research that you've compiled in your book, and you didn't ask me to plug it, but that was something that has helped me as someone who loves history and loves, you know, where did this belief come from? Where did it originate? And really, like you were saying, it's the rapture is a new-ish belief. You know, what are other theological views of these topics? And, you know, really looking at that and sort of starting to ask questions, to the point where the church that we were attending briefly when we first moved out here, I had already been into your podcast and also knew a lot of the players and knew what was going on. So I am always suspicious when we're out here, because we're in Northern California. So I'm just like looking for a Bethel influence. And when they had the guest speaker, he opened his pulpit to the Jesus Culture pastor. And I was just like, if I wanted to go to Jesus Culture Sacramento, I would go to Jesus Culture Sacramento. I don't want to go there. You know, and I did. I was like, why are you having him? And he got very defensive. And I did, you know, like, oh, well, I'm really good friends with Banning Liebscher. And so then I did ask, I said, well, do you support what he's doing with the Anaheim Vineyard Church and that whole mess? People can look that up if they want. There's a mess there. But again, that's another example of that Bethel honor culture trickling into, you know, other churches in this area, where if there's a leader that's being abusive and people call them out, they had the same line of, we're not speaking to that. And so, you know, I was asking him all about it, and he was like, oh, well, I'm really good friends with Banning. And let me just tell you, Banning says that Jesus Culture is not Bethel. You know, they're different. And I'm like, that is BS. I was like, it is the same. I was like, Banning got it started at Bethel, was there for 20 years. Jesus Culture came out of that, and they're planning a church, and now you are platforming her at our church. And he didn't have a good answer for me. It was just bluster. And I think this man of this pastor is very well beloved, and I think he's a genuine Christian, whatever, but he has his own agenda. He wants more of the charismatic movement at his church. And I was like, I can't, like, I'm out. You weren't able to, and he won't take that further step to ask the questions. So, and the final nail in the coffin was when the stuff with Sean Bowles was coming out, he, you know, wrote this blog post about how it's a net win for the kingdom. And it's like, this is great for the charismatic movement because Bethel's taking accountability and God's cleaning things up, but, you know, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. And I was like, goodbye. You know, like, people, and my point in telling this is that I get it. It's scary to pull the thread and start asking questions, is dismantling your belief and maybe stuff that your life has been built on. However, like, you can't keep perpetuating the system. Like, it's like, well, that was a bad actor. Let's keep this system going. There's something about it that we keep having these bad actors that keep popping up and showing up. So maybe we need to dig deeper into what we're believing in the system itself. And then what if we have children, or what are we exposing our kids to generationally that will perpetuate this type of abuse?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah, thank you.
If you've enjoyed our show and you want more information, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org. For more about the dark side of the New Apostolic Reformation, you can read Weaponized Religion, From Christian Identity to the NAR, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible.